Dieter and Jake are back. Dieter and Hutch.
Back, folks.
Okay, let's explain what happened here real fast before we lose all of our viewers, Jake. you went to Japan.
I did.
Which sounds awesome.
It
and
was.
I'm envious. And I stayed here and was a single parent because my wife had COVID. And I'm like, I'm going to do a bunch of shows when Jake's gone and we're going to keep this thing going. And then it's like, no, you have a responsibility. You wear a wedding ring and you just need to lock it down, buddy. And I'm not going to lie. The last 2 days are the first 2 days that I have felt like I have been out of the fog. So let's break down 49ers and Cardinals. What do you say?
Let's do it, buddy. Yeah, it's sorry to all of you sickos. But,
not
you know.
Sorry.
I mean, if you know, if there's any time of the season to miss, it's that part. Didn't want to miss it.
I mean, let me tell you what you missed.
Yeah. How about we do a Dieter recaps? Because I would what would happen is I would get the scores. I'd wake up and like games would be either going on or ended, and I'm like, oh, 49ers are up like 24-10 on the Rams. Should be good. And then I checked like 30 minutes later. So yeah, recap me.
So you were here for the Jets game. We talked about it there. They go to Minnesota and, Robert Flores is out here just making, it was very apt. He was making Brock Purdy see ghosts and Sam Darnold was like, fine, like legitimate. He was fine. He's like a good quarterback. He's absolutely what you would think Sam Darnold would be with a great offensive play caller and Kevin O'Connell. They had Justin Jefferson for a good portion of the game, but not all of it. And Brock just, there was a bunch of kind of little things that I'm not going to hold on Brock because what Brian Flores is doing is so awesome. The more I have been obsessed over the last couple of weeks watching Brian Flores tape, that dude is operating on a level. And honestly, I'm hoping that Brock is thinking about it too, because I think they're going to play in the playoffs. And that's giving more credit to the Niners than the Vikings at this point. The Vikings look great.
Sure.
Brian Flores is in his bag. They got the formula over there in Minnesota, right? Great offensive play caller. And that defensive coordinator who is just, I have nothing to lose because no one's ever going to hire me as a head coach again. It's that Andy Reid Spags energy they got. They just need their Mahomes. Apparently, Sam Darnold is that right now. So that happened. House of Horrors, the glass house of horrors, both for Birds and the 49ers strike. And then they go to the Rams and it's like, okay, everything's okay. You know, the Rams are all injured. And then they're like, what about special teams? And Kyle's like, shit, we forgot about special teams. And a bunch of other stuff. Like, what if we don't put Devondre Campbell in man-to-man coverage against a tight end in a critical situation? Or what if Charvarius Ward wasn't ass? Because he was ass. That he's been ass the whole season, Jake.
Or the one other thing I saw, Ronald Bell.
Well, I didn't even get into Ron. I kind of feel bad for Ronnie Bell. Though I did think I saw, I could be wrong about this. This is now very faint recollection. And again, your boy ain't operating 100%. But I thought I saw a little bit of a neck tattoo. Just throwing that out there. And it explains everything. So, yeah, Ronnie Bell, it was a heartwarming story of a man who made it to the NFL without hands. And that became a real problem when they actually needed to throw him the ball. I've never seen drops that aggressive. Like, legitimately, he was, like, pass breaking up the ball. Like, a cornerback wishes they had that kind of batting ability. And me and Lottie, my toddler, go outside and we play basketball and she blocks shots like Dikembe Mutombo, RIP. That's what it looked like when Ronnie Bell was out there trying to catch a pass. It looked like my toddler trying to catch Perfect throw, perfect situation. 49ers should win. And I guess the only consolation there is that they have now had their we choke this one away in egregious fashion. Usually it's in the Super Bowl. This time they did it in week three, so that was a win. And then they played the Patriots, who, much like Charvarius Ward, are ass. They're quite bad. Worst offensive line in the NFL. Jacoby Brissett's out there as a human battering ram. Kind of feel bad for the guy because he's a nice guy. And he might have been a good quarterback, but frankly, the only reason he's in there is because, like, you weigh 245 pounds, right? Yeah, we're going to need all of those. And I did think that some things clicked a little bit. They were pretty sloppy on offense. And we'll get into all that with the Cardinals breakdown because it is apropos and germane. But yeah, they got right. They played kind of a shitty game and they still won 30-13. And I'm not going to lie to you, Jake, the second half, I was bored out of my mind. So I would also like to note that the 49ers, through terrible, uninteresting football games, have ruined my last Christmas and birthday.
It's good
my
stuff.
Birthday was Sunday. You don't get birthdays after you have kids. You just transfer them onto your children. It's like a trust fund, except for birthdays. So that wasn't a big deal. Like, I don't care. Oh, you're 36 now. Great. I don't want to think about it. So I was glad to go to work. But to be that bored.
I got you something.
I'm deeply appreciative. They're laying around somewhere. I promise you. Trust me.
I got you something.
What's going on behind me in this shot? Not you haven't seen. I could do that. Hold on. Let me just show you what we're working with here. This is the workings of an insane man. You can do desk view. Here we go.
Oh God.
Here's okay. So we have like nicotine and headphones and a ketone meter and a book, The Death of Truth by Stephen Brill. Here's just a box from something. That's a computer screen. Remote control. Nope, that's been dropped now, and the batteries are on the floor. You can kind of see the laundry over here in the corner. Yeah, but I'm standing. That's going great. So here's how we're going. You couldn't see any of that. You couldn't see any of that shit.
Okay, no, also for content. Our audio listeners, just incredible content. Dieter showing his room. It's probably better for the audio listeners, to be honest.
I would hope so, because there was nothing for the visual learners of our crew. So that's what happened here, Jake. Needless to say, you missed so much and so little. You want to do Jake's Travel Corner now or later?
Yeah, let's do it now. Because you know, I left for 2 weeks. People at least I think want
people
something.
Worried. They were worried about you. I didn't realize. I mean, listen, we're all operating on Dieter Kurtenbach's ego here. I didn't realize you were the star of the show. So congratulations. You now get. We have to switch the title.
I think I did. I didn't want to like just put out like leaving for Japan in the middle of the season. But I think the way I put it out, people were like, are you still employed? I'm like, yes, I am.
Let's be honest. A fair consideration.
Fair concern. I did not. It was a little too cryptic. Didn't mean to be. The trip was fantastic. I got super lucky where I went with my girlfriend, and she has a friend from growing up in Colorado who lives out there with her boyfriend. And they're big YouTubers out there. Huge, actually. They got recognized a bunch, and they took us around.
Unlike us.
Soon. We're going to be big in Japan, baby.
Hey, that's the dream. Spinal Tap.
But it was genuinely, I'm about to be viewed in so many videos in Japan that are going to do way better over there than ours will here, which is hilarious.
There was a time when with the audio podcast, Jake, that we were huge in like Moldova. And
yes, we were big somewhere weird.
I'm pretty sure. I mean, we're always big in Australia because I'm still public enemy number one over there from the Jared Haynes situation years and years and years ago. You were just a wee child. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that there's a bunch of people who are watching via like Onion or Tor or, you know, some sort of double VPN situation. And that's why we were really big in Moldova. So true sickos. They couldn't even let
that.
They had to encrypt their data to let people know they were listening to 49ers game day at the time.
As they should. And so, yeah, anyway, Japan is a lovely country. There is a lot of things I learned, which was cool because boyfriend, he's like very knowledgeable about Japanese history. Cool. I ate so much food. Their portions, you think Japanese food, small portions, they're enormous. I was stuffed the entire time I traveled. Was really cool as we got to do dinner at both of their family's houses.
Did you sit on the floor?
Yes. Well, not at their houses because that's sort of being phased out a little bit because Japanese people are like, this is uncomfortable as hell. Yeah. Why are we doing this? But I did have a few meals on the floor. Cool. It was just really cool. It was like I got to see some of the Japanese countryside.
That's wild. So, yeah, I don't think a lot of people get to do that, right? Like they don't go to those areas.
And not by locals. Like we went to some restaurants and some places that like we would have no business going as tourists and have no idea where to go. Where I think tourists go, I went here, you should go here. It's like you actually don't know anything. And unless you're with a local, like, don't recommend me anything. Like, there's only a few things I would recommend. And a lot of them I can't recommend because you wouldn't be going with someone who's local. And so learned a lot of Japanese history. It was just really cool. Like, it's a beautiful country. Super humid, super hot, but like, okay. I got to go picking kabocha squash with a family in their farm. incredible stuff. The dad was like cutting the grass and like throwing me pumpkins from the top of the hill, and I was catching them. Incredible. Yeah, Kyoto is a really cool city.
Yeah,
Kone Hot Springs, very nice. Tokyo is insane. It's just the most massive city I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
But yeah, like
people
just
in Tokyo, right?
Yes.
And it's, it never like ends. Just goes right to the base of Mount Fuji.
Endless, genuinely. And we did see Mount Fuji, where you expect there to be snow on top. There wasn't. And we took the Shinkansen, which is their bullet train. By the way, the trains here make me so, they already made me mad. I'm furious now.
So I'm a big, I live in Alameda. I want to turn Alameda, when this all goes bunk or when it goes gangbusters, doesn't matter. We all know this sports journalism thing ain't going to work out for me. And my plan is to become a strongman local politician and turn Alameda into the Amsterdam of the Bay Area, where just everyone rides their bike everywhere. And we have nothing but great, you know, public transport. Like that's the dream. That's what I want.
I love that.
And
I love that.
So people call me bike pilled, but really I'm urbanist pilled. And yeah, trust me, Jake, through spirit, I've watched a lot of Japanese train videos over the day. That's been going on for 40 years, by the way. They invented the bullet train 40 years ago. We don't have any bullet. We have one bullet train.
It's incredible. So like we took it and we took the slowest one possible just because it stopped. But like when you book in advance there, you get first class for cheaper than a regular ticket.
Right.
So we took first class and there's like two pedals for your feet, one for your shoes, one if you take your shoes off. So you take your shoes off and for 3 hours,
like a Spirit Airlines thing called,
it's insane. And it's like they have these things at the train station called Ekibens. Eki is like train or is a station. Eki means station. Ben is like short for bento box. So they call them Ekibens. So you get them before you get on the train. I had one that was like beef. One was like Wagyu beef and one was like noodle beef with like something else, just like really thin and delicious. But you pull a string
and it
heats up and you get on the train and you eat it. It's incredible. For 3 hours,
200 miles per hour.
Genuinely, you're going 200 miles an hour. You're sitting with your shoes off. You feel nothing. It's silent. And then you see Mount Fuji, which is so tall, but like it's a slight incline. And then there's clouds, and then you look up in the top of Mount Fuji's over the clouds. It was an incredible trip. I ate some of the most incredible meals I've had in my life.
Yeah.
Learned a lot about Japanese culture. A few things. Most single-use plastic I've seen in my entire life. But apparently they recycle it all. I'm not buying it. There's genuinely everywhere you go, you get like a hand towel that's wrapped in a plastic bag. I'm just not buying that they're recycling all of that.
I'll say this. They have a culture of respect to where you don't litter.
They do. There are no trash cans. Everyone takes their trash home or deposits in like a train station trash can or something. No one litters. Every city's very clean. Every city's extraordinarily safe. There's a strong culture of respect and shame where one day we got trapped. Our car broke down.
With you.
Our car broke down and we got trapped in Shirakawa-go, which is a beautiful like heritage site, these thatched roof villages that have been preserved, like traditional Japanese town. And the car broke down, so we got stuck there for like 8-10 hours. And so we're walking around and we have all of our suitcases that were in the car. So there's a river on one side of the river and then there's a bridge. And so we go, all right, we're just going to leave our suitcases there, bring food back across, have a picnic. But you're not really supposed to do that. But we checked with the place that we got the food from. They're like, yeah, just bring the stuff back after you're done. It's fine. But we walk across that bridge and no one had looked at us the entire trip. And when we walked across food on this bridge going the wrong way, the amount of genuine like shame glares, I was like, oh, that's what they're talking about. So that was interesting. But like, I just think it's every city has its own unique thing. They're very specialized in like there's a specialty for every city. You think ramen, like there's a lot of different types of ramen. There's a lot of different types of katsu. Like there's just so many different things that each city specializes in, which is really cool. And last thing, we stayed in Nagano, which is where I went pumpkin squash picking. There's a ton of fruit there. And the boyfriend that we stayed with, it was his family. They had the greatest grapes I've ever had in my life. And what they do there is they peel the skin off these massive grapes. What? Because basically the grapes
how
are
big,
so
how big,
sweet.
How big of a grape?
Like the size of a strawberry, like a big strawberry. Not a huge strawberry, like a medium-sized strawberry.
They get out like a peeler?
You just peel it by hand, and you take a napkin and put the skin on. And it's really arduous because it's like, it's the whole they did You're surgery on a grape thing.
Peeling a grape, yeah.
But like, you didn't think about it because you just go, and initially I thought he's like, I couldn't tell if he was saying it was just bitter or bad for you. I think it was bitter, like it's fine to eat on its own. But you peel it off and you taste it, and you're like, that is the greatest grape I've tasted in my entire life. And I'm still gonna, you know, like grapes here that are crisp, you know, but these were like soft, delicious. Like you just, I don't even know how to describe the flavor. I didn't know grapes could taste like that. They are serious about fruit there and serious about quality. And if anyone has any other questions, hit me up, but I won't have a lot of recs for you because I got very lucky with who I went with. And a lot of it was just having like the inside track. And I did hike Mount Yoshino. Highly recommend it. If you stay in Nara, you take like 3 trains and no one was there. We just hiked this entire mountain. It's like a cherry blossom mountain where samurai used to hide. And during cherry blossom season, like everyone goes and it's packed. But in the off season, there's no one there. And you just hike this huge mountain and you're alone. And it's lovely. Bring some food, snack. It's awesome.
So you ate some bitchin' grapes and I got to watch Rams and 49ers. So you know, who really won? Let's talk about 49ers and Cardinals after all of that jealousy-inducing nonsense that you just spouted. Niners are going to play on Sunday. Now they're going to play on Thursday as well against Seattle. I have long circled this portion of the calendar as the It Gets Real portion with a bit of a gradual ease in to the it getting real, but it's real. Like the Patriots are not real, right? And they have 2 losses on the calendar already. They have used their fuck around and find out. Now they are finding out as part of this hellacious schedule that they have. I've argued long from week 5 on. And you got Kyler Murray, James Conner, Marvin Harrison Jr., Greg Dortch, who is not a little white guy. He is little, but he's not a white guy. Who would have thunk it? Went to Purdue, and his name is Greg Dortch. Could have fooled me. Regardless, Arizona's defense is ass. They're not good, but they are well coached, which I'd rather have good players, but that's just me.
Yep.
The spread on this game is 7.5. The initial line on this game when it was put out in Vegas was 9.5. And I am not saying the Niners are going to lose this game. I'm not. I have some very serious worry, Jake, in particular if Fred Warner doesn't play 1 and 2 is in any way limited, isn't the Fred Warner that we've seen in the first 4 weeks, which I will say of all the things that you missed, Fred Warner playing the best linebacker I have ever seen, and I do not use that lightly, is probably number 1 on the list. You have missed out on just world-class performance from the mic.
Watching him in the first half before he got hurt was sick.
He's incredible. So where is your level of trepidation for the 49ers going into this game? Again, 7.5, you would think that should be a cakewalk. I think we both know better. I think the fans know better. Talk me through how you see this game right now.
The first thing I will say is it's going to be, at peak, 95 to 100 degrees.
Yep.
That
it's going to be the hottest game in Levi Stadium history.
For the fans who are sitting in the sun, don't go. Genuinely. Or bring genuinely bring an umbrella, a sun umbrella for yourself.
I don't think
like,
you're allowed to because, you know, they want you to die.
It's and whoever does go and sits outside, hydrate, wear the most sunscreen you've ever worn in your life. But again, I wouldn't go because this is legitimately dangerous. It's starting at 1? We got a 1 p.m. start. And by 4 o'clock, it's going to peak and be anywhere from like 96 to 100. So that's a problem. And that's something where I'm with you. Like, if Warner's not there, there is a route where like James Conner can just bully the hell out of you. And, you know, Malik Collins is like holding together the interior of the defensive line. You might need some like Evan Anderson just like holding up, like really, which is not something that's, I'm just saying, in a situation just where it's 100 degrees, mass, you're going to have to rotate a lot. You're going to have to rotate a lot. And I think this game might honestly, there's a lot of things that could determine it, but if it becomes a long drive game, whichever I think defense is forced to be on the field longer will probably lose. I think there's a way for this to be sort of a pass happy game with shorter drives. I do think this is a game where Brandon Ayuk scores. I think the line on his yards is like 58.5. I'd take the over on that.
It's dipping. Yeah.
The things that I would normally just evaluate this game normally because of the temperature, I actually think it's kind of unpredictable. Especially if Warner's not out there, the defense is a little disorganized, and you've got Devondre Campbell. I don't think Demetrius Flanagan Fowles will play, so it's probably like D. Winters and maybe Jalen Graham.
As
like,
well, he should not, by the way. He has been real bad. He's made Devondre Campbell look competent.
It's a situation where let me stop there. The safeties worry me, and some of the things that I've seen the Cardinals take advantage of, like when they gutted the Rams, they ripped their safeties. Like there were, and they signed, I forget who it was, but they signed.
Let's even be more specific about that. What the Rams did, they shifted, or against the Rams, the Cardinals shifted the safeties to an overloaded side, right? Because the Cardinals are running 10 personnel almost exclusively. I know that Trey McBride's in the game, but like they're running empty all the time.
Right.
It's a true four wide set, and very reminiscent Missouri football 2008 holler at them Tigers. Regardless, they would shift all, they would get the safety, they'd get everyone to go over that way, and then they'd get one-on-one Marvin Harrison Jr. and Tre'Davious White, and that did not work out for Tre'Davious White. Right. Marvin Harrison Jr. has 2 touchdowns on 4 catches. All of them big yardage. And that's what this game screams to me. Like, you noted it. I want to highlight it. This game has broken coverages written all over. This is just going to be bad defense across the board because it's hot. You're rotating a lot. The Niners have a stars and scrubs roster. The Cardinals just have a scrub roster. And I'm just seeing 20, 30, 40 yard chunk plays again and again because, oh, the safety, you rotated in a safety and he doesn't know his assignment. And here, there goes Dortch or there goes Harrison. Yeah.
One other point about the heat. I don't know what time of day the shade comes in, but the 49ers do have their bench on the shaded side of the field.
They full Dolphins.
I'm just saying that might matter a little bit. You're baking out in the sun if you're the Cardinals all game long. Granted, they're in Arizona, so they're probably used to this.
But they practice inside and they play inside.
It's true.
So I don't think that they are ready for this. I also don't think the 49ers are ready for this based on the way they've practiced, which they're like, we're not doing that today.
Yeah, and I don't want it to be all about the heat, but when it is this extreme, it's impossible to ignore because that's the sort of thing where any long drive is just going to wear on you in a way that it normally wouldn't. It's going to make when it's hot, like when I went to, I'm doing another travel thing, but when I went to Barcelona like last year, it was miserable because it was the summer and they have no grass. It's all concrete and you're just baking in the heat and you start getting annoyed and you can't think. Mm-hmm. And if you're doing that and you're running all game, like, you're just going to miss assignments. You're like, what was the play call? God damn, it's so hot.
Yeah. It's like my entire existence when I lived in Miami. I moved out and into a real temperate climate, and I'm like, oh, I was really stupid for 4 straight years.
it's just hard to think. It's just hard to think. Like looking at it, let's say just take the heat out of it, and let's look at these teams like sort of independent of that. You've got a really bad defense in the Cardinals. Like, really, they're dreadful. They have some of the worst talent in the NFL. Again, like you said, well coached. But like, you look at their defense and it's Buda Baker and Dennis Gardeck. Are you high on Zaven Collins? That's what you're looking at. That's what you're looking at, because it's just not a good group. Like, it's like, oh, their defensive line group is just large guys who are not talented.
They have a bunch of Evan Andersons, is what you're telling me.
Yes. Max Melton is the corner, the rookie corner out of Rutgers, who's like showed some stuff, I think, last week.
But he's not, but like, he's a guy for a specific scheme, because he's more of a bash and crash guy.
I feel like he, yeah, if I'm remembering correctly, he's a little bit smaller. You know, he's, or I guess he's 6 feet. He's 6 feet.
No, I just remember him being a feisty little shit. And then that gives me questions on if he can actually flip his hips or not. That was my concern with him.
We'll see. He played well last week.
He did.
They haven't been like starting him, but I don't know. Their corner, Sean Murphy Bunting, is not, not good.
No.
I don't know. I don't know what's
still in the league.
Yeah. I don't know what Starling Thomas really is. It's just like, there's no real talent to worry about. And even Buda Baker, it's like, George Kittle's beaten Buda Baker pretty bad in the past.
Well, that's if George Kittle plays, Jake. And
it's true.
This is another note that I think is kind of flying under the radar, because it's very obvious that Fred has to play. Like, it's so obvious, because he's been the best player on this team, with Brock Purdy playing at an MVP level. But Fred's been the best player on the team. George gets his ribs injured in the first half of that game. Fred didn't play the second half. Right, he's I want to against the Patriots. Oh, I want to get in there. Let me get in there. I can do this. And they're like, no, please don't. Like, we need you, and you're actually injured, and all this stuff. They put George's ass back in the game. It's the same injury that's now kept him out of practice. I'm not saying that he can't go. I presume he will go, but the fact of the matter is he's injured, and they're playing him through injury. And the reason that they're doing that is because, as much as we love Saubert in week one, you cannot run your offense, especially without a Christian McCaffrey. You can't run this offense without George Kittle. You can't run it with Jake Tonjes. You don't have any threat. And even if you were to, say, go full galaxy brain and go, okay, we got Saubert in the game, so we're going to use him as a receiver because they think he's going to be a blocker. Well, guess what? Now he's a receiver, and he's not that good a receiver. And then you go, oh, well, they got Tonjes in the game, so we're going to use him as a blocker because they think that he's going to be a receiver. Well, he's not that good a blocker. So you're just playing into their weaknesses, hoping that the defense gets caught off guard. The reason that you have George Kittle out there is because he can do both of those at an elite level. And that does indeed challenge safeties. And it does indeed challenge linebackers, because they actually have to think it through on, oh, what do I do here? I've been put in conflict. There's no conflict with Tonjes and Saubert. They want you to do the thing. They want you to go and do the thing you're not good at. So if you put yourself in a situation where it's like, oh, we're going to make him do the thing he's not good at, congratulations. Now you have a player who's not good at the thing. So it's a real issue here. And I think that
hasn't stopped him in the past,
but it's resulted in losses. Like, it's really fundamental. One thing that I do want to get into here is we try to dive in a little bit deeper. Red zone offense has been an issue for this team. I don't find that surprising in the least bit. It was an issue for this team, and then they got that guy who wears 23, and then suddenly they're really good in the red zone. It was like, oh my God, what happened? And I was talking to a couple of folks, and they're like, well, it forces teams in the red zone to play man-to-man, because you cannot zone up Christian McCaffrey in the red zone. And what you want to do in the red zone is play zone, because there's not much zone to cover. And so even if you miss an assignment, you're 3 yards away from where you should have been. The water is muddy because there's not a lot of room to work with. The challenge of playing zone in the NFL is that you might have 70 yards behind you. And if you have 70 yards behind you, that's a lot of zone to cover.
Yep.
And you can exploit that with certain route combinations and, you know, running styles and stuff like that. When you don't have a lot of room to work with, you want teams to be in man-to-man, because man-to-man forces you to go head-on-ahead. And it gets you a linebacker versus Christian McCaffrey in the pass game out of the backfield. And it results in a shit ton of touchdowns. And they haven't had that, because no one has to, much like with Tonjes and Saubert, no one has to respect Jordan Mason catching the ball out of the backfield. So here's my galaxy brain thought of the week. I think we see a lot of Debo in the backfield, particularly in the red zone. And I'm all the more comfortable saying that because I asked Kyle Shanahan about it on Wednesday. what's the difference between having Debo and having McCaffrey in the backfield? And there was obviously a pretty easy political answer he could have given. And instead he goes, I don't want to get into it. I don't want to explain all the differences, because I do think that just with a couple of conversations, like, this is something they have to do to get guys to play man-to-man against them in the red zone. Now, there might not be any red zone opportunities in this game because they score from 50 yards every flipping time. But
right.
Red zone offense, situational football, Brock has been incredible on third down and situational because he can run it, and that gives you a whole new element. There hasn't been a great deal of separation, and they've played some pretty good defenses. But the red zone stuff does, that's situational football, and it's been an issue, and I think you need to see more Debo in the backfield in the red zone.
Yeah. One thing I'll say about red zone production, Chris Foerster had an interesting quote yesterday. He's kind of asked about that. And he took specific blame with the run game down there. He's like, I made three terrible calls in back-to-back-to-back weeks.
I just
had terrible calls, and I told Kyle, like, we got to run these in the red zone. So that's that's worth noting. But
to that point, Jake, like, you're having to rely now on your run game coordinator and offensive line coach to come up with scheme in order to score. He hadn't been put in those spots before because it was obvious what they were going to do. Like, okay, we can run it with McCaffrey. That's fine, but we're in man-to-man. So you can run a gap. You can run a power. You don't. Now you have to come up with something here. And I do think that Kyle, I thought that they were rather vanilla in the first couple of weeks. I do think Kyle took it to a new level against the Patriots, which I do think is impressive. As much as the Patriots suck, I do think their defense is fairly talented, particularly on the back end, and particularly sound. Like, I think they're a well-coached team. So Kyle's going to have to be in his bag again here, but the red zone stuff, like, oh, we made bad calls. No, red zone's all about, do you have the players? It's, you know, it really is. I mean, it's bad red zone teams don't have a lot of talent. Good red zone teams have a lot of talent. And to this point, I think that it's pretty obvious that they have just been relying overly on Christian McCaffrey to make everything work for him. And now they got to get into their bag a little bit.
Yeah.
And Debo Samuel isn't Christian McCaffrey, but he has a chance to at least allow them to do the same things conceptually.
I will say, like, going back to last week where the Kittle touchdown and they had to score it three times. And this is like a note of optimism for Ayuk. Like, there was one play, the one that went to Juice, you know, basically Purdy got pressured immediately because Banks got beat and had a terrible game. And that was rough to watch between him and Brendel. Like, it's one of them either, like, every week you got to worry about one of those guys. But Ayuk beat Christian Gonzalez. There's a lot of talk about that. He beat him clean in man coverage. Snapped to the right and was wide open. Purdy just couldn't get there.
Yeah.
So, and that happens, kind of, I think, a lot. That happens, I think, a lot more than people recognize, which is fair, because why, if I'm a fan, I'm not going to go and just watch all 22 tape like a sicko.
You can't see it on Fox.
No. And they don't usually replay it. No. But there is a lot of that. And I asked Ayuk, who's, I guess, been really hard to talk to.
He wasn't the easiest guy to talk to beforehand.
Right. But he talked a little bit more. Yeah. Well, when you put a lot of tension on yourself and then it's not going well, that's what you open yourself up to. I will say,
he got the attention.
He got the attention. I'm not that worried about him from a performance standpoint. The drops.
Can I say this? He looks slow. He looks slow. He's not getting in and out of his breaks like he used to. I know that he's always been a smooth player. He is slower getting to the spot. And I do think the two factors on why Brock hasn't been, well, maybe three, because you were about to mention drops and I cut you off. Apologies. But the drops doesn't inspire confidence. He's coming in and out of his breaks slower. He's just not moving as fast as he did last year. It's really damning when you think you watch it and you go, he looks a little slow. And then you go back and watch last year and you're like, oh yeah, he looks slow. It's pretty impressive how it's fallen off. Who would have known that you needed to do some conditioning in July and August instead of just running around and, you know, being online. And then the other aspect of it is, and I think that this will dissipate, but there is a value to training camp in that you find a bit of a rhythm, right? It's supposed to be an install. It's supposed to be, you get the feel for what it is you're doing. You're not going to develop that kind of feel in a mid-season practice because everyone's injured, so you don't know who you have out there. They started the season like that, where you didn't have Trent Williams out there. You didn't have Brandon Ayuk out there. And so you were running Jacob Cowing and Conley and Pearsall as the X receiver. And when you have Deebo Samuel and George Kittle and Juwan Jennings, you don't look to the X receiver because that guy's not as good. And now, yes, he is as good, but Brock Purdy spent a month installing this offense without having Brandon Ayuk there. And there is just a level of connection that has to be developed in some area before the season starts. So why would he look to the X when he has really good other options? And you're seeing how Brock is throwing the ball. He's trying to get it into tight windows a lot. Now, there's been plenty of open window throws, don't get me wrong, but like, he's trying to get into tight windows a lot. That's because he developed that trust with a Juwan Jennings, with a Deebo Samuel, with a George Kittle in training camp, because they were out there practicing and he's made that throw before. He hasn't made a throw to Brandon Ayuk outside of in-season practices and games this year. So I don't blame him for not looking to the X.
Yeah, he also, I asked him about, you know, the attention Ayuk's getting, and he was, you know, said that they are putting more attention on him. I think you see that there's more safety help over the top, which is, I think, part of the reason Jennings is getting open, is they are just giving more help to Ayuk because they know Deebo is not a route runner. He's a great football player. He's not a great true receiver. That's not a hot take. So it's, Jennings is sort of the one other guy who can separate and get open, even if it's like the slightest bit of, he can't really set. It's funny. Jennings doesn't really separate. He just gets an inch, but he always makes the catch. By the way, the catch he made was better than Kittle's. I know that's an insane thing to say.
Well, you have to be specific about what catch that was, because he has quite
the
a
catch
few of them this
last
year.
Week that Purdy launched it, and it was over the shoulder. He literally, it was the deep middle where he's like getting tackled as he catches it. You slow it down, and he's like basically Willie Mays, almost no look over the shoulder with a guy draped over him for like 40 yards.
It was
insane. Go back and watch that on the All-22. It's insane. I don't know how he caught it. I actually don't, because he could barely see the ball. Yeah, he's just a gamer. But back to Ayuk, and you know, what Purdy said, he's, you know, blah, blah, blah. You got to execute better in the red zone. That's a different question. Wrong question.
Let's read the transcript.
Just reads the entire transcript. I'll just go to... they're clouding him, putting safety over the top, double teaming him. We still have plenty of opportunities to get him the ball. I know we're going to get him plenty of targets and plays coming, so we're excited about it.
Okay, listen, I'm not in any way saying that Brandon Ayuk is washed. I'm not saying that he won't get there. I think that we always expected some level of lesser from Brandon Ayuk coming into this season. I'm of the mindset that that shit needed to end about 2 weeks ago. That's not how the world works, apparently. We are now at a point of, it's now or never, buddy. And I know that that's not a factual thing, because obviously it can come around 10 games into the season. Oh, I'm finally feeling great, guys. Feeling like my old self. Well, by then, what are the 49ers going to be? Like, you got paid $30 million a year. And I've said this multiple times about Kyle Shanahan and all the credit in the world for him. Even in bad seasons, he's held the locker room together. But when you have guys making big-time money but not making big-time plays, this would be the first time, in my estimation. And now we're in a new territory that I'm not sure how the Niners locker room will handle it. I think it will be fine. I have every reason to believe it will be fine, because history shows us it's been fine. But again, a new dynamic in place, and one that should absolutely be concerning to both the Niners and Niners fans, in that the Niners thought that Brandon Ayuk would stop acting like this when they gave him his money, and he's still acting like this. The shorts thing was fucking weird, Jake.
Yeah, I saw that. I will say, does it make you feel any better that I saw Shanahan and Ayuk and Deebo all giggling at practice yesterday? Very, Shanahan was like imitating a gunner for some reason. He was doing like a weird shuffle thing that I've never seen him do. I kind of wish you'd seen it. But I feel like that was, I don't know. I'm not going to read too much into it, but I do think Kyle might have a moment of like, ugh, this guy is like, he needs a little bit of love because he's, you know, it just, I've been hard on him.
And that's what the money's for.
I know. And I'm not saying Kyle will do that because really, like, you got paid, just go play. But I do think, I don't know, it's tough when you feel like everything is against you, even if you've created that in your own head.
I'm done psychoanalyzing this shit. Like, I really am.
I'm not being sympathetic. I'm just saying it might take him.
You're being pathetic.
A little bit of time to get out of his own head.
I don't disagree with that. I would note that when Christian McCaffrey is out and you're now a $30 million man and you have Debo Samuel, who's being asked to do a lot more, right? Hey, get back in the backfield, Debo. You know how we got Christian, so you didn't have to do that anymore. Guess what? You're back there, baby. Enjoy that new contract we gave you. Haven't heard a peep from him. Juwan Jennings is out here strictly outperforming you. Not just in, hey, the targets are going his way, because Ayuk's always covered, so the targets have to go somewhere. No, he's kicking your ass when the targets are coming, and they're not. It's not all open windows.
Yeah, the contested catch—that's what it is. It's the contested catches. Jennings is making them. Ayuk hasn't.
Like half the passes to Ayuk, he drops. I know that's a gross exaggeration, but it rings true in everyone's mind. No, I mean, he drops a lot of passes in wide open windows. He's not out there balling. At all.
Nope.
And it's got to change. It's got to change because I'm very much under the impression that Christian McCaffrey is not playing for this team this season. And I'll be happily corrected when that changes. But you have to operate under that assumption for the time being
you
that
do.
It's over. It's cooked, that he's got barbecue chicken legs is what it is.
Come on.
Just falling off the bone.
Come on, man.
He's got Achilles tendonitis in both Achilles.
I know, but the barbecue chicken legs, I wasn't.
You know what I'm talking about. You've seen the
video. I know. I just wasn't prepared to hear the term barbecue chicken legs.
I feel bad for the guy. Actually, I don't, because he got his money and he's an all-time great player. And there's some sympathy in the sense that, hey, you know, your career might be taken away from you by injuries. That sucks. That absolutely sucks. No ifs, ands, or buts about it. But ultimately, did the Niners do a physical when they gave him the
contract? Yeah, that was bizarre. I think what it is they trust him too much with his own health, you know, and he's got he invests so much in that it's like, and he works so hard that
no
I think that's part of the problem. That's well,
man
that's
went
part
to Germany, baby.
It's like when it's tendonitis,
we're gonna have to do Christian McCaffrey's travel corner.
Right, when it's tendonitis, it's like you need rest, and he's a guy that really struggles to rest. That's why Kyle said we have to protect him from himself. Like start of the season.
Unless it's late in the season and you want to keep some weird touchdown streak going.
Right.
Which I'm not saying is the reason why this is happening. It's merely just a strange juxtaposition of last year where they're like, what if we kill Christian McCaffrey? And this year they're like, we could never play Christian McCaffrey for his own physical health sake. And it's like, oh, we might have done a little bit of overcorrection there. Just
right. I want to loop back to the Cardinals for one moment. They just to go back to the game where they got blown out last week, right? It was I want to zero in on just the end of the second quarter and the start of the third, because this game was actually could have been very close. Mm-hmm. And they were down 14.
Are you saying that the middle eight was important and that in fact a 2-for-1 might have decided the game?
Are you hearing this, Kyle? Kyle is, I'm telling you. Yes.
Full record like, right now.
See what I mean? So it was 14-7. Cardinals are down 7. They're driving, I think with 44 seconds left. Kyler goes for the go ball. He has a tight end wide open. Takes the go ball. Doesn't get complete. And then they go for it on 4th-and-1. I'm not sure if Prater was injured at that point. He may have been. And so So that's why I think I honestly don't know if he was hurt at that point or not, but they had like sort of a long field goal chance on 4th-and-1. They went for it on 4th-and-1. They didn't get it. What happens It was like the 31-ish, fourth and one, 33 seconds left. They didn't get it. Washington comes back, drives down the field. Jane Daniels ripping it. They kick a field goal of their own. So instead of it being 14-10, it's 17-7. Yeah. Washington starts with the ball in the second half. And immediately, Washington comes back. They kick it. Washington gets the ball back to start the second half. Deep ball immediately down to the 9-yard line from a DPI. Daniels runs in a touchdown. All of a sudden, instead of 14-10, it's 24-7. Immediately, blink of an eye. Yeah. Then Arizona, first drive, they run, have like a 9-yard gain with Connor, holding. Then they pass for a good game, holding. Then they have a drop, then a sack. Now it's 3rd and 34 on their own 6-yard line. They run to get off the goal line, and then they punt. So you have a situation where it could be 14-10 going into the half. Let's say, even if you allow a touchdown, okay, 21-10, you can come back from that. Instead, they collapse like a neutron star on both ends, and then the game is basically just over at that point. So that's something where it's like, right. And so it's like when teams make mistakes like that, the 49ers have had stretches like that and they get it corrected. 49ers have had a lot of games where they just throw it away because of mistakes. Is that something where you view that as, okay, this is a mistake prone team that just does this? Or was it like a nightmare game that they just, you know,
it's both, ignore? Right? It's right. Both. I mean, one, you're going up against Daniels, who is, I believe, one EPA point away as of today from overtaking CJ Stroud's season total from last year. Okay, so he's...
Have him in both leagues, by the way.
Yeah, you're welcome. running quarterbacks are a cheat code.
By the way, I had CJ Stroud in a keeper league, and then I drafted Daniels anyway.
You're welcome. And so, listen, when you watch him torch my Missouri Tigers, who had an incredible defense last year, you go, oh, there's nothing that can be done. He's that good. And we're not operating on like an early stage Lamar situation or an early stage Josh Allen situation where it's just like, I'm athletic. Let's figure out what happens here.
Right.
Both of those guys, they just showed up and they're like, well, I'm the best athlete on the field. So like, let's play quarterback. Like it's high school. No. And yeah, it still worked for them. Don't get me wrong. It took Josh Allen a little bit longer than Lamar to be sure, but he sees the game so well.
He's just chilling in the pocket. Feel not sweating.
There's nothing there that phases him because he's so athletically gifted, and he has been granted an unbelievable situation with Cliff Kingsbury as his head offensive coordinator, where they're like, let's just run a college offense, which isn't to say that it's in any way remedial or anything like that. I'm just saying that it is utilizing the principles of spread that Cliff tried to do in Arizona and did to a certain effect. They made the playoffs, it should be noted, with Kyler Murray. Utilizing that system for a Washington team that does have some talent, especially on the offensive side of the ball, for a quarterback that is not at all phased by the mental aspects of the game because he is on top of it. The one big takeaway I had outside of Joe Shane is not as good at this as we are from the Hard Knocks in the offseason was that they did a lot of prep with Daniels. And Daniels is like, when we're talking about, you know, recognition and play calling, understand, like he's all over. He's really sharp, just like with Stroud, really sharp with this stuff. And to have that kind of physical ability and to be that sharp from the onset, say what you will about Brian Kelly and LSU, they don't coach down to players. You come up to the level of their coaching. That's because Brian Kelly's an egomaniac, but it's really impressive to watch regardless. That is a tough game for them, the Cardinals, because now you don't have a lot of tape. At some point, Cliff will hit his limit. I guess there's a pun in there. You'll get to the edge of the cliff. And then he has no more plays, right? This is what happens every year with Cliff, where you get 5-6 weeks of them, and then you go, oh, they run like 7 things. And he doesn't have the ability to then put wrinkles on the wrinkles. Like he's never shown that ability. He runs plays in a vacuum. But he's calling the right scheme. He's got the right scheme for the right time. And Daniels is the right guy at the right time.
Right.
So with Arizona, it is 100%. They don't have the talent. And a lot of these so-called mistakes are pretty simply bad circumstance of bad talent. So, hey, we're in a spot where we really need a good drive, hold and hold. Is that because they were out there and ran the hold play, or is it because they have shitty offensive linemen and it's a big moment and everyone's amped up?
Right. I honestly think their offensive line is decent. I think most of their players are solid. Paris Johnson's had a good year. I'll disagree with you if you disagree, but I think it's a pretty good offensive line. Not like
we're about to find out.
Not some star talent, but their defense. Like, I just watched one play where they're just playing soft zone and no one's covered. There's actually like five eligible receivers, and Daniels could have thrown it to any single one of them. I think it was quarters, and there was just huge gap to the two vertical players. I think they were running like middle hooks and then like three guys underneath. And sure, they're funneling everything where then the Cardinals can run to the ball. But then he took one of those checkdowns and they whiffed on a tackle. And it's like, I just, as much as there is the heat, as much as the Cardinals offense can be really explosive, people are giving Kyler a little too much credit for just taking quick throws. He's still scrambling around a ton. Yep. Like, he's still Kyler. Like, people are like, wow, he's really just playing like a pocket passing quarterback. I don't really, he's doing it more than he used to.
That's fully incorrect. But he's still Kyler.
He's still Kyler. He's still scrambling around a ton.
And that is the definition of boomer bust quarterback.
Right. I just think, regardless of Cardinals offense being great, I do think Connor running the ball down their throat if they don't have Warner is like a real, real clear way for the 49ers to get cooked in the sun. But I just think the 49ers offense is going to gut this Cardinals defense. I have a hard time seeing how they don't. They're a bad run defense team. Mm-hmm. They're a bad pass offense or pass defense team.
There's nothing that's good. They have no positive qualities.
Fifth worst EPA per play in total, sixth worst on passes, sixth worst on rushes. They allow almost 150 rushing yards per game. Mm-hmm. Like, I think on the other side, you could say the same. Like, Mason might bully the hell out of them. And then what do you do?
Can we lean into that for a second? Because this is something that I talked about with Larry yesterday on his stream, and it's something he brought up to Kyle. You and I are both Garendo fans because we've seen on the practice field in these faint glimpses what he could be. There's a level of talent there that can't be taught and is perfect for the scheme. He's looked terrible in games. It's somewhat similar to the Cody Schrader situation, albeit on a different level of athleticism, where he's awesome in practice, you're feeling good about it, and then he gets in the game and you're like, oh no, this is not good, because it's obviously a different level of competition. And beyond that, the 49ers run defense kind of sucks. So, like, you should look pretty good against them in practice. If Jordan Mason has to spend a minute in the blue tent, there are some real concerns that even Arizona's run defense will be A-OK, because so much of this run game for the Niners has been Mason, not just with the vision to make the right read on every single run play. It has been wonderful to watch someone with this kind of vision. He's got better vision than Mitchell, and Mitchell had pretty good vision, all this stuff. And then someone who breaks tackles at such a high level that the first guy never brings him down. And how many yards? I mean, he has to have the majority of his yards this season after contact. What happens when you have Garendo back there who has no yards after contact?
And I think you have to play Garendo in this game. Like, if you're going to, like,
you gotta rotate,
it's genuinely going to be 95 degrees. You cannot run Jordan Mason every single play if you're going to have long drives. It's just not responsible.
He's from, like, the South. I mean,
I know. But I'm just saying, like, over the course of a season, if you don't know if you're going to get McCaffrey back, like, this is a game. You gotta give Garendo a chance to figure it out. Because if he does figure it out, then you're like, oh, shit. Now we've got Raheem Mostert clone. Granted, will he ever get there? I don't know. I mean, I thought coming in, the fact that he missed training camp, he was one of the guys that desperately needed it because he doesn't know how to play running back. He's just fast. Like, he's super talented, but, like, needs time in a system, and he didn't get time on the field. He's been injury prone.
Yeah.
But you kind of just got to throw him out there and say, run fast in this direction.
Yeah.
If you see even a slight hole, run as fast as you can through it. Please run with two hands.
If he can't do it this week, you have to really wonder if he'll be able to do it this season.
And if you have to go get somebody.
Well, or they give Patrick Taylor the run, or they call up Keyshawn Vaughn from the practice squad. He's looked good in practice. But again, you know, another thing that's kind of stood out to me, Jake, as you've not been around, is we were really wrong about Isaac Yiadom, and he's been awful, and it's kind of jarring, and it's starting to make me wonder how much of what we saw in training camp is real and how much of it is just a fugazi.
Yeah,
it's really concerning.
I think he started off great, and then when he came back from that injury, he didn't look as great, and so I went, well, you know, I'll give him the benefit
of the doubt. I think he's out. I think they're going to go with Green. I think in particular they're going to go with Green and Mustafa in this game.
Yeah, and he picked up – he's limited now. He picked up an injury
in
practice yesterday. So, yeah, I'm with you. I think it's going to be Green. They started playing him a ton in the second half.
Well, and they have to in this game because, again, you're going up against a spread team in the Cardinals. There's not any, you know, heavy backfield or anything like that. So you were always going to have to go into some dime packages just naturally in this game. So
we'll see. I'm interested to see what they do with Hufanga because, like, do they actually play him over Mustafa if he's healthy? Like, I don't think they should, but I'm interested who they trust more.
This is something I want to get into here, and it's something that we alluded to in the preseason. Like, this team doesn't have a free safety. As much as I thought Jair Brown can do it, it's pretty clear that this is not. He wants to be in the box. He wants to be in the mix. He wants to be a strong safety. He's good at that. They have three strong safeties, four, arguably, with George Odom, who they just decided again, like, maybe we shouldn't play this guy ever. Maybe we should go find – is there anyone on a Disney cruise right now? They just kicked him to the curb real fast. They have four strong safeties and no free safeties in what is theoretically a cover three system. And I know they've been playing more four lately, or in cover two particularly, too high to be even more specific, as well they should. But that's a pretty big concern, and I'm wondering if they need to start working the phones for a trade in that regard and go out.
I think that's a fair concern.
Who's the free safety for the Dolphins? He's good. Holland?
Or go get Buddha. What's weird is I think Mustafa is actually the most capable of doing that, but I have trouble believing he'd be able to confidently do that this year. Like, I think he has the range and potential, but again, he's like been more of a thumper. He's taken some rough angles. Like, I think it's just going to – safety's a hard position to learn. I asked Nick Sorensen, like, what's the hardest part about being a young safety? He gave like a real answer, but it wasn't like what I was hoping for. He said communication and using your voice, which is true. Like, communicating a lot of that stuff is tough, but like, it's not recognizing what offenses are doing and not again. I feel like that's the real answer. But yeah, you're right. Like, they don't have a clear answer to say, all right, let's just put one guy up top. Mm-hmm. If they send two vertical routes, like, which is he going to make the right decision? They don't have a guy that I think they can confidently say is going to make the right decision. And it's like you talk about Daniels. This is a weird comparison, but like these guys that come out of the transfer portal and get all this time quarterbacking, they get experience and they get recognition.
See a lot of different defenses.
Mustafa was the only guy I think that wasn't a transfer. He stayed at Wake Forest, but he didn't like play a ton of true free safety. And Jair Brown, he played at Penn State, but he like didn't play, you know, 5 years. So these are younger guys that didn't have like SEC level competition playing safety. And they weren't like true single high safeties. So I'm with you. I think it's something that I do believe those are guys that like, in a couple of years, you could be saying, oh, what? That's an insane safety pairing.
Right.
But right now, it's not looking right. So, you know, this is where Dieter says safety is destiny, and the 49ers are screwed.
maybe. it's of concern, to say the least. And perhaps this isn't the game, or perhaps it is the game. I proffer little expectation for this contest. It feels so very wide open to me. And unlike the Patriots game, where the Niners had the ability to fuck around and still win by a large margin, and that's what they did. They kind of just fucked around for a while. This game feels like a great opportunity for them to show that, hey, we've kicked it into a new gear. Like, September is preseason. We know what we are. We know what we got. We had certain expectations. Maybe those weren't met in a positive way. Maybe they were met in a negative way. But, like, this is what we got. We're rolling with this. We're in it now. Everyone should be 100% at this point, or at least fully on board with whatever the plan is. We're going to operate under the premises currently at our disposal. That's not a sentence, but you know what I'm saying. This is their chance to remind everyone that they're about it, because it is going to be an up and down season. If you didn't learn that from the first 4 weeks, it was coming anyway. I don't think anyone could look at this schedule and think, oh, you can't go Dante Whitner. All I see are winnable games. You can't do that with this schedule. And so it was always going to have a little bit of adversity. It's the NFL. Last year, the Niners' adversity came almost entirely in the middle of the campaign, right? And then they get one bad game against the Bengals. But they lose three straight, and it's like, oh, this guy is all. And then they come out and they kick Jacksonville's ass so goddamn hard, they just reminded everyone we're good. I would say that this game is like that, because the New England game did not feel like the we're right, we're back. I think it got people off their back, rightfully so.
Yeah, it was an easy win.
It was an easy win. The schedule provided it. And I think that Arizona, and particularly running quarterbacks, have always been a problem for this team with their scheme. It's going to be a huge issue without Fred Warner if he doesn't play. It's a big issue even if he does play. And offensively, this is the kind of game where you shouldn't have to worry at all about your defense. And I worry what happens if the offense sputters on their own volition, and now you are actually relying on having to play complementary football. Like, if the 49ers go out there and win 47-40, so be it. Like, that wouldn't bother. In fact, I'd write a positive thing about that, because I expect the defense to have holes and to get their ass kicked a little bit here. If the offense can't hold up its end of the bargain, that's a big red flag for me on this squad going into a Thursday night game against Seattle, which you don't think defense. Mike McDonald's watching the Vikings tape and saying, let's do the same shit. What he does.
Also, I know the Seahawks got gutted by the Lions, but they also had no defensive line. Sure. Their personnel's not great, but they do. No. If Boye Mafe comes back, they've got some pieces.
It's also Thursday at home, division. Here's an opportunity to make a statement.
Every Thursday night game's a toss up. I think because of the heat, and it's the last time I'll mention it.
No, it's important to mention.
It's just a little weird. And I think the amount of rotation you should probably be doing in this game, if you don't get off to a hot start where, like, if the 49ers jump out ahead and they can just run the ball, they're going to feel fantastic.
Game script will work for them. Yep.
No question. But if Arizona jumps out and the offense isn't quite clicking, it gets dicey, and Connor's bowling ball down the hill at you.
200 fucking yards.
In just 95 degree heat. That's tough. That's tough, especially if you don't have Warner and you don't have a lot of pieces at defensive tackle that are really going to stop that. If you're going to Levi's again, Don't. Watch from home. Air condition. It's going to be lovely, especially if you're in the shaded section, I guess.
Underneath. Yeah, if you're sitting under us, if you're enjoying the shade of the media, then I guess you'll be A-okay. If you're living in a luxury box, give us money.
Hydrate. A lot of hydrate things. And not just...
don't hydrate with Cuervo and fucking Modelo's either. That's not hydration.
You actually do need to drink water for this game. And I am
I'm a little concerned.
I'm a little worried for the fans. I actually
more than a little. I'm worried on our 5-minute walk through the parking lot. Like, I don't think that the right formula for surviving three and a half hours sitting in the sun is a bunch of weed and beer. Just throwing that out there.
I don't know if my old car battery is going to survive.
I can't give you a jump. Actually, I was thinking about taking the train on Sunday. But that's just
because it gets done early.
I've been train-pilled.
Train-pilled?
Well, the worst, you know, behind the scenes here, David Lombardi took the train from, he lives in the city. And so he rode up to Levi's on his bike. And I've never been more envious of anyone ever. Because I'm like, I would like to do that. One of the reasons I lived in Oakland in the East Bay is because it was an easy bike ride to the Raiders. Yeah. It was an easy bike ride to the A's. Went to the last A's game, rode my bike. Easy bike ride to when the Warriors were there. Now I have none of that. So now I'm just in my fucking car, which is fine. It's nice, but like...
Yeah. I know for me, it's like, am I really going to take Caltrain down? It's like for Giants games too. Like you can barely get on some of the trains. So for this, am I really going to take Caltrain down a light rail? And then...
I think you should. That's my thought, but that's you. That's your decision. You know what I don't like? Having to, so I have an electric car, so like it doesn't make any fucking noise. Hmm. And so when, you know, the driveway to the media parking area, that's not supposed to be where people walk. Well, guess what? People are going to walk there because it makes sense to walk there and to go into the stadium. So all I'm doing is almost hitting like 100 people in a row because they don't hear me coming in my 8,000-pound fucking car. They don't hear me coming because also it's like how many different fucking loudspeaker music styles can we get in the course of
people also years? Have no, just zero awareness. Well,
they're blasted out of their mind.
They've been better about the media a lot. I appreciate that. Locking it down.
No,
I guess that was week one.
You showed up for one game, buddy. Guess what? That shit regressed fast. But we are not. I'm just saying I might take the train. It's not a complaint. I'm just saying I don't like almost hitting people consistently with my car. It's
I think
not
that's
a fun
fair.
Mode
I will not because I like getting out of there as quickly as I can when
fair
it's
enough.
Over.
Yeah, I'll give you that.
Last thing I will say. Mm-hmm. Go Mets, baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go Mets. It's funny because
I don't want to rehash the three baseball teams that I pay attention to and care for. The White Sox, my number one team, lost 121 games. You're welcome, Mets. The A's in Oakland no longer fucking exist in my mind. So that's super fun. Still angry about that.
Yeah.
And then
it's going to be funny when they come back to Oakland.
What I wouldn't give. And then, and then the Giants decided, hey, why don't we put someone with no baseball operations experience whatsoever in charge of our baseball operations department? And every fan is like, this is great. It's the equivalent of saying, hey, our top prospect didn't pan out at the major league level. What if we got somebody who doesn't play in the minor leagues and just put them in their spot instead? And it's like, well, Buster's smart. He can figure it out. Fucking one of the smartest people I've ever talked to is Farhan Zaidi, and he got his ass kicked by this job. What happens when you have no plan and no experience? I hope I'm wrong. I natural pessimist, not a great combo for me. Everyone else is like, but Buster's won rings as a player. Yeah, so did Juan Uribe. We're not putting him in charge either. Aubrey Huff won some. Should we make him the GM?
Yeah.
Bad.
It's,
cult of personality is a bad idea, unless you're following this podcast and enjoy our personalities, in which case it's a great
idea. That's right. That's right. And in closing, the Mets made me feel something that I forgot I could feel over the last few days. You know, I'm pretty nihilistic for the most part. But then, you know, if Everton do something or, you know, you know, the Knicks sometimes when they get deep in the playoffs and I
how do you feel about the cat trade?
That's actually something I've been talking about because Josh Dubow is also a Knicks fan. And here's the thing, cat soft as Charmin. Get in the fucking post, brother. Like learn a hook shot. Look, like I just can't. It was the same thing with Porzingis. Like you're 7 feet tall, get in the post.
Well, at least Porzingis was a great shot blocker.
Back somebody down. Throw that ass into the post. I don't care. Like you watch a little bit of Zach Randolph tape, just a little bit. I'm not saying you can't shoot the three. I'm not saying you can't spot up, but like pretend you are aware of how large you are and have some self-respect. Yeah. That's my issue. I don't think he's like a, he's not going to be like a plus defender. He's not really, but I will say Randall's a stopper. I think they needed to get rid of Randall. So, I mean, Towns is, I think, a net positive player for the most part until the city of New York sees him do something cringe and really soft. And then he goes, that's not nice. I've been playing in Minnesota and everyone's so nice there. That could be a problem.
Not even a beloved, like everyone's saying really nice things because he is a legitimately really nice guy.
Yeah. But, and he's been through a lot of hard shit in his life, which is not
want to give the guy the benefit of the doubt as a person. He'll have a long, successful life beyond the sport of basketball, to be sure. And he's certainly a very good basketball player. But the fact that he felt no shame entering the three-point contest in multiple years, I'm not here to, you know, kink shame. But, dude, it's not – I'm the best shooting big man of all time. Like, what are you doing here? You're not beating the allegations. This is brutal. It's brutal. Now, I will say it's interesting that Tibbs signed off on the deal because he did coach him in Minnesota before. I'm sure Jimmy Butler's laughing somewhere in the Bahamas right now.
No question.
While playing dominoes for 12 straight hours. And then I do think that the Knicks' perimeter defense is such that it can insulate the cat of it all. Yeah. And I'm actually interested to see the two big man lineups when Mitchell Robinson comes back and Cat at the four, because that's a lot of length. And I think that that could actually work out okay. But yeah, if Cat decides he wants to play the role of Joel Embiid for like 5 minutes a game, that's a total game changer, and the Knicks are a legitimate contender.
Yeah. I mean, listen.
You don't ever have to put your back to the basket, but I don't know, dip your shoulder once.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's a top-heavy roster, but like Brunson, Bridges, Ananobi, Hart, and Towns, it's hard not to like that.
For 82 fucking games for 47 minutes a game. Let's go. That's the thing.
Like the Knicks,
I'm gonna run you to the ground.
So stick in the regular season and win one playoff series, and then once again, their bodies will collapse because Tibbs is a sick man.
I've never been so convinced of anything in my life that the Knicks are gonna have the number one seed and that they will win a playoff series just on Garden vibes alone. And then they will play Philly in the second round, and it will just be dog shit basketball. And no one should win, but Philly will prevail because Tyrese Maxey scores 72 in a game or something. Mark all of this down. That's it. We're going to be back to doing our jobs here from here on out.
That's right, folks. And, you know, if you feel spare in your life, if you feel worry, two things. One, you can just go to Japan.
Fuck yeah.
And you can get dinner for four people for $70. And coming back to the U.S., it's brutal. And two, the Mets are inevitable. And by inevitable, I mean they're absolutely going to lose to the Phillies. But they have made me feel something. So
you're advocating for people with mental health concerns to watch the New York Mets?
Yes, absolutely. Because it's only for the sickest of people.
How does it feel to be a drug dealer?
They're not good.
You want to feel better? Here's some fentanyl.
Their starting pitchers are like Sean Manaea and like other 35-year-olds. Their bullpen is Ryan Stanek, who is like a 6.0 ERA.
To be fair, and I like Ryan Stanek with the Mariners, but that's neither here nor there.
Yeah, he's great. And then he can either retire the side or he can allow one hit and then collapse. And Edwin Diaz is like, is he going to be good or just fully the good? They don't really have a good team, but they're fueled by vibes and it will collapse inevitably in this series. It's funny because they used to only be pitching and now they're going to face Zach Wheeler. And he's going to kill them.
And Aaron Nola. Hopefully they just get five games of Tyon Walker, they'd be fine.
Yeah, it's true. Zach Wheeler, by the way, you know, one of my camp counselors growing up in, in day camp was good friends with Zach Wheeler, New Jersey kid.
So this hurts.
Yeah.
South Jersey's going to be a fucking war zone.
Oh, my God.
The Battle of New Jersey.
Oh, my God.
Here.
Yeah. Mike McGlinchey will be down there just.
You better know. Than what he does on a day-to-day basis. We'll talk more offensive line. We'll get into Sam Ekwonu, all that stuff after the game on Sunday. Looking
happy
forward to, it.
To be back. Thank you, folks, for sticking with us.
Or not.
Yeah, we're locked. We're
Thanks
locked
for
in
joining
for the rest
us.
Of the year.
I mean, as long as the 49ers are locked in, we'll be locked in. So let's find out if That's that right. happens. All right, bye.